Welcome to part two of our interview with Stephen Blackwell about the Haunted Birdcage Theater.
When we're talking about the Birdcage Theater and we're talking about the amount of deaths there, as you stated earlier, about 26, as far as we know,
26
that took place within the walls of the Birdcage. Are there any notable deaths, more well known than others, that stand out to you that then connect back to the hauntings of the Birdcage?
Sure. You know, I can think of one very clearly that's well noted, and that was a fact of a lady of the night back in the 1800s. She got pregnant, and she had the child, and allegedly she took the child into the back outhouse area, which is no longer there. They've now put a tree there, and it's surrounded by greenery, but there used to be an outhouse area behind the Birdcage Theater. And apparently she had dropped her baby down into this hole where unfortunately passed away. They had found this child's remains months later down at the bottom of this well. And they also found a knife down there that they claim was used in one of the murders within the cage itself. Now, I don't have any real famous names. A lot of these people were rather immigrants coming over to, you know, try to set up their family, or they were, you know, actual Wild West cowboys that, you know, would jump on their horse and go from town to town to find their opportunity. A lot of gambling, a lot of saloon and prostitution happening at that time. But people would shoot people right on the street. You know, you were allowed, obviously, to carry guns. Well, I guess you still are in Arizona, but, you know, at that time, if you looked at somebody funny, they'd just shoot you down in the street and somebody would come and drag you away and that would be the end of that. And so, you know, when you're standing outside the Birdcage and you're looking down Allen Street, you can just, at least I can close my eyes and just see the activity that used to happen there, you know, with the horses and the mud and the boots and the sweltering heat of the desert and, you know, people getting hanged and people getting shot. And it was just an everyday occurrence there in Tombstone. And a lot of the people that were in Tombstone were simply visitors just passing through. And so, you know, a lot of them wanted to stake their claim, whether it be, you know, making a rich gambling or, you know, becoming part of that poker game at the Birdcage. But then a lot of them would move on and go, you know, to the outer locations. Tucson was the biggest city that was close to Tombstone at the time. So, you know, I think that it's just a matter of, you know, what people experienced while they were there. I imagine a lot of people kept their mouth shut and never, you know, never said anything. But there's definitely some others that have come forward and not only given their experience, but seem to be resonating from other experience from the past. So it gets me to believe that some of these people, a lot of these people that go and visit, haven't done the amount of research that I have on it, and they're just going because it's a tourist attraction. But yet they walk out and they say, you know, I felt something strange when I was standing in that corner over there, and almost like an energy on my shoulder, you know, I could feel a heaviness there. And you know, that's where it ends. But somebody like me looks at that and says, there's got to be a reason behind that, and let's try to figure it out. And so I think that that's where, you know, you get a lot of these folklore stories that pop up. Whether they're true or not, I can't answer that. But I know that when I was there, I definitely left the first time saying, yes, that is a haunted property. I can vouch for it. So
it was very much a location that unsuspecting travelers would go into, and essentially many would lose their lives and become victims of the kind of dark characters that would frequent the building. Not so much the regulars, because the regulars knew what was up. It was more so one of those traps that don't stop in there when you're in town unless you know what's up.
That's right.
The spirits that haunt the Birdcage Theater today, I know you touched on a lot of them being residual energy. What are some of those residual actions that are playing about within the Birdcage today?
Yeah, you know, the one photo I took that really made me believe that there was a residual spirit is I took a photo of one of from the stage itself up to one of the closest bird cage slots there, and there's a mannequin of a man standing in there. I think it's supposed to depict Wyatt Earp or whoever. And when I took the photo, there was nothing out of the ordinary. I originally took the photo just to catch the, you know, to, as a tourist photo, really. And when we investigated it later and looked deep into the photograph, we could definitely see a hazy image in front of the mannequin, to the point where his left arm is very difficult to see because there's something blocking in front of it. And when you map it out, you can clearly see that it looks like the torso of a woman, a smaller woman, perhaps wearing a veil over her head. You can even make out one of the eyes. And she's wearing a white flowing dress that seems to stretch down in front of this mannequin. So, of course, I realized this after we had left the first time. The next year we went back, I took numerous photographs from that same spot and didn't get the same picture there. So it made me believe that this was a residual kind of energy of a woman that perhaps lost her life there at the birdcage. And there was a lot of that happening. You know, these guys would spend, in today's dollars, thousands of dollars to go up to one of these cribs, have a woman up there with them. You know, the drapes would be closed, they'd get served cheap whiskey all night and be able to do what they wanted with these women. And unfortunately, a lot of these women were depicted as simple scum, right? Street walking scum. And so a lot of them were unfortunately part of the murder count within that building. And so I believe that a lot of their energy still exists, because obviously they probably would have died in a tragic way.
With that being said, and what the view would have been at that time of those women in that theater, Do you think that the death count that sits at around 26 is accurate, or do you think there may have been many more that had passed by but were never accounted for or documented because of the way that they viewed the individuals?
That's a great question, because and I've never really thought about it too much, but now that you mention it, I would say that number is probably low. I would think that there were some things that were never reported. Perhaps there was a lot of underground stuff happening there that was kind of away from the view of the other townsmen. I don't know if it would be a lot higher than that. I mean, 26 murders reported over a 9-year period in one little building is quite horrendous to think of. But I would imagine that... you know, I know that there were a lot of murders around the Birdcage Theater. For instance, the marshal, Fred White, that used to be the marshal of Tombstone, he was shot and killed by Curly Bill Brocious, who is the very famous cowboy. If anybody ever watched the movie Tombstone, starring Val Kilmer back in the 90s, it's very well depicted. And they've got a plaque just outside the Birdcage Theater saying at this spot, Fred White was shot and killed on this date by, Curly Bill. And, you know, so I imagine that there was a lot of murder that happened around that location as well as inside. And I think, you know, you came with guns blazing and you walked a confident line. And if somebody stepped across your line, you just did them in. And that was, of course, they had some similarities to law at that time. That was something that Wyatt Earp and his brothers were trying to get out of when they left Kansas. So they went to Tombstone to try to make it big, make it rich there. But they were kind of pulled back into the law there by the fact that there was this band of cowboy activity that was going and, you know, stealing from the rich and the poor, and they were basically running the town. And so they had to come up with some sort of laws, and that's what ended up happening before the O.K. Corral shootout, is the Earp family decided to bring law back. And when you look at the history of the Earp family, they're thought of as heroes or folk heroes, but in the Tombstone area, they are very much depicted as the criminals, because the people that were living in Tombstone at the time were very much intimidated by this gang and kind of rolled over and said, okay, they're kind of in charge, just stay out of their way and nobody's going to get hurt. And the ERPs came in and they said, you know, this isn't going to happen anymore. First of all, nobody's allowed a gun here anymore. You know, we're having curfews and we're shutting things down here and there. And of course that really upset this band, and that's what led to the altercation at the OK Corral. And after that time, the ERPs were actually condemned and called murderers. And there's actually signs still up today in Tombstone that say, you know, here's the three guys that were killed during that fight, and they were murdered here on the streets of Tombstone. And it's quite fascinating because you can actually stand there at the OK Corral on the very spot that it all took place. But, you know, it's amazing when you think about the history there and, you know, the way that it's very possible that this paranormal activity could result is simply because of the amount of death that happened. And, you know, there were two separate fires that also took place there that burnt the whole town down. One of them, as a matter of fact, the mayor was out in Tucson getting a fire truck, because Tombstone didn't have one. And before he got back to Tombstone, the place had burned down. And so I imagine there were more than we know that lost their lives in that town. And you can feel the energy right from the graveyard through to the OK Corral and into the Birdcage Theater, all down Allen Street. It's very much a historical feel, if you will.
Do any of the spirits who haunt or residually haunt the Birdcage, do they make other appearances in town? Are they still lingering from business to business, if you will?
Yeah, I get the impression that the spirits that have been reported within the Birdcage Theater kind of stay put in that area. There have been other claims, like I said, at the graveyard. There's a very famous photograph online of the Boot Hill Cemetery of a gentleman standing in the background that, or kneeling or lying. I don't know what he is, but it's a very strange photograph. You can see it online there. And also the OK Corral, although we didn't have any experiences around there, they've got a swing set there that has been there probably about 30 years now. And that swing set is said to, you know, start those swings move by themselves without any wind being present and things like that. Now, again, I never experienced any of that, but I would say that the spirits that are within the walls of the Birdcage seems to not connect to anybody, and it just stays put. And I have a feeling it's because that's where that energy is comfortable, right? That's where it kind of has always resided, and it's a comfort. I don't know, you know, how that would all work, but that energy seems to stay put within those four walls.
Okay. With the Birdcage Theater and the ghosts that haunted, well, we obviously talk quite frequently about them being from the Wild West days. Are there any ghosts who haunt the theater that originate from its second coming, essentially, you know, post 1930 after it reopened?
Yeah. So I mentioned to you during our last call that there was a gentleman, and I don't have his name handy right now, but he was kind of a curator of the Birdcage Theater, I think from the 1980s until the early 2000s. And he was also quite a believer of the paranormal, because he would witness a lot of this activity while he was in, you know, doing maintenance or cleaning up the area. And it turns out that he was actually murdered on the streets of Tombstone in the early 2000s. I believe that he was part of a robbery that went wrong, and somebody shot him and killed him. And so when we were back on our second visit, I had heard this story on television. I had wrote down some notes, did some research. And we were all sitting around in a circle. And when I say all of us, there was a group of people investigating. And we had a ghost box. And we weren't getting any response from this. We probably sat for 20 minutes. We asked questions. We listened. But all we heard is the static, you know. And I decided to bring up this guy's name. At the time, I could remember it. And I mentioned his name to the person who was running the tour. And she said, oh, yes, we knew him very well, and yes, he lost his life, and da-da-da-da-da. And after we were done with that brief discussion, the ghost box really started going off. It started beeping a lot. You could hear kind of strange voices coming through it. And, you know, we all looked at each other and said, well, okay, that's kind of strange, you know, because for 20 minutes that thing was very quiet. And as soon as we brought that up in conversation, that happened. So, of course, you know, the thought pattern is that that gentleman has decided to stake his energy as well there at the birdcage. Other than that, I don't really know of any recent anomalies that have been reported there.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Stephen Blackwell about the haunted Birdcage Theater. Hope you enjoyed today's broadcast. Thank you for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. Without that support, we would not exist. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.